take a deep breath, take the higher road. That's what they always say, as if they know the way. They won't take it from me. But don't ever doubt yourself, it's life ain't just a dream. You make your own, so kick and scream. The people move alike with a never-ending force. You never had the chance, so what you waiting for? The day has come, my friend, cause this is war.
Many believe that the hesitancy of hospitals and physicians to step outside of the confines of rigid protocols began with COVID. While these last 2 years have certainly taken that to a whole other level, it has most definitely existed for much longer, which you will begin to gain a better understanding of when you hear from my guest during this episode. You're listening to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton. Before we get started today, I do want to encourage our listeners, as I do every week, that if you have questions or comments, or perhaps you want to share your own experiences with what you're seeing on the front lines of healthcare, you can submit those to any of our hosts by visiting americaoutloud.com/nursesoutloud. From there, you can select the name of the nurse you'd like to direct it to from a drop-down menu. We'd love to hear from you. We encourage all of you to engage in the battle and find your voice in this fight. But until you're able to do that, we will be that voice for you. Joining me today, and I am so excited to have them here, is the dynamic husband and wife duo, Lourdes and Chris Lavoy. 12 years ago, Lourdes bravely battled cancer, and since that time, she and Chris have made it their mission to become health advocates, helping many overcome their illness through more natural and holistic modalities, including diet and lifestyle changes. They decided to do talks that would be life-changing with their platform focused around choice, creating option C from a body, mind, and spirit perspective. They speak to and help people worldwide who reach out to them for advice and inspiration, and not just about health, but in conquering life in general. They have their book out on Amazon, Our Journey to Option C, and Lourdes' book, Three Step into a Healthier You. Their new show, The Lourdes and Chris Show, can be seen anytime with newly released episodes on Thursdays at 6 p.m. Pacific Time on Rumble, YouTube, and Facebook Live at The Lourdes and Chris Show, as well as on their social media platforms and their website, thelourdesandchrisshow.com. I was blessed to have them welcome me as a guest on their show just a few months back to talk about the work that we're doing at Nurse Freedom Network, and I'm absolutely thrilled to now have this platform and be able to now extend that same invitation and a courtesy to both of them. Lourdes and Chris, welcome. Thank you for being here with us today.
We are so excited to be on your show. I mean, well, we love you and everything you stand for. And so to be on your show is just like a blessing and an honor.
Thank you. Yeah, so we were connected several months ago now by Tom Jacomas with the Power Networking Club. And Tom, he's just absolutely amazing. And truly, he has a gift for making these types of crucial connections. So side note, I guess I need to have Tom on the show too. Tom, if you're listening, pull your calendar out. We're going to book him also.
Right.
Yes.
But I was so thrilled because, you know, when we started talking, I felt like the connection between us was instantaneous. And I just thought to myself, okay, these are my people. This is my tribe.
Yes, that's how we feel.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I mean, so it was incredible, and I'm so happy and excited to have you guys with us today. But let's talk a little bit about your background and what brought you into this battle for option C.
Well, actually, our battle started 12 years ago when I was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma, where I had cancer in the lymphatic system. And just the moment I was diagnosed, I instantly knew that that was the nagging feeling I had had for 3 years of being a difference in the world. So I thought, oh, this is it. This is perfect. So I'm just going to go and do it my way instead. I'm not going to do the typical treatment of conventional medicine. I'm going to go research why I got cancer, you know, what battles cancer naturally, and what are the things that I need to avoid. And the moment I started searching for that, along with what other people have done naturally. I was blown away how massive the information on how your body works and how you can actually heal it, and you don't really need to poison it back to health or burn it back to health. It was more like, this is how you do to build your immune system up, and these are the things that actually get rid of, you know, cancer and the cancer stem cells that are causing the issue.
Yeah. Now, I think that when Lourdes and I, when Lourdes was diagnosed with cancer, we were the types of people that you would expect, where Lourdes saw an opportunity to create a documentary, to make a documentary about her journey, to change the conversation around health and our options. I was terrified, and I was definitely like, no, you need to listen to the doctor and you need to do everything they have to say. And so, you know, for Lourdes, her journey was different than my own. And I think the reason why we had that dynamic between us was because it had to be that way. I had to be the skeptic, and then I had to see what she was saying and come around. And Lourdes had to be the believer so that we could push through. And the combination of the two brought us to where we are today, where I'm of course on board, and I clearly see that the path is correct. I think God puts you on a path for a reason, and we have learned so much, and I've grown so much because of it, and Lourdes has grown so much of it because of it. Because I'm the skeptic, and whenever I deal with someone skeptical, I know exactly who they are. You know, I know where they're coming from.
Yeah, he definitely understands, because he gets, well, that was me.
Yeah.
He used to be very skeptical. Yeah. So, but I think this whole journey was meant to be, because I've known people who had fought cancer, and many who have died after a long, you know, fight. And then I've had others that were fine, but then they got it again. And then they went back, and then they fought it, and then they got it again. And, you know, before you know it, then it metastasized, and it got so bad that they just had all these health issues and eventually succumbed to them. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, yeah, that makes sense. If you've, you know, literally destroyed everything in your body and then expect to not have issues. And I think because of that is why I thought, no way am I going to go through that. I'm not going to go through that torture and think that as my body is letting me know that this is not working, that I'm getting sick because of it, that it's telling me, why are you poisoning yourself thinking that's going to get you back to health? You know, I've had family members, you name it, with it, and still deal with health issues because of it. And I'm the opposite. I'm healthier now than I've had ever been before I ever even got sick.
Wow. And I think the best way to describe, you had mentioned option C, and so I'd like to break that down a little bit. The best way to describe what happened was when we started doing a research and started making the documentary and started to track what was happening, we realized there were options that everybody had available to them when it came to their dealing with their cancer or any health opportunity that manifests. And it was option A, just listen to the doctors blindly. Don't do your own research. Put your health completely in the hands of the doctors. Option B was to do absolutely nothing at all. It was shocking how many people we met that just don't do anything. They don't change anything. These are people who think that it's God's will for them to get sick. It's God's will for them to die. Or they just stubbornly don't want to do anything to change what they've already done. And then option C is where we are, where you do your own research. You take responsibility for your own health. You make an informed decision, and you inform yourself on a decision. And I think that has a lot, that speaks to a lot of where we are today as an environment in the country when it comes to having medical opinions forced upon us in a way that where they're making it more and more difficult for us to create our own option C. And so that's why we're big advocates for option C.
Well, yeah, and I think it's also because I personally don't want to be practiced on. You know, and that's why it's called practicing medicine. And I've always felt that medicine actually meant healing. And I don't mean covering symptoms so you don't even target the cause. I believe medicine, real medicine, when you put it in your system, it builds you up and heals the problem. And I think things that go into your system and cause secondary issues should never be called medicine. It should be called, who knows, but definitely not medicine.
Chemical intervention. Yeah. I call it the sick care system is what I call it.
Perfect. Yeah, yes. It's called the sick care. I love that. Yes. Yeah. Perfect. Yeah. That describes it perfectly.
And so prior to your diagnosis, had you always had that more kind of natural health mindset, alternative health, or were you more into the conventional medical model prior to your diagnosis?
Well, prior to my diagnosis, I did, you know, I see doctors, I do the physical thing. Now I'm going, what do we do a physical? You're not sick. Yeah. But at the time, I believed in getting physicals. I believed that if the doctor told you you need to get surgery or whatever, then that's what you did. But there was, you know, throughout my life, I've always was shown natural methods. I mean, through my mom, anytime we got sick, she didn't really take us to the doctor. She would like, you know, if we got the flu or fevers or any of that, she'd, you know, bathe us in this thing called alcoholado. It's like an alcohol type thing. Mm-hmm. She wrapped you up like a burrito and a blanket and stuff, and you sweated it out. And the next day you felt brand new. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and if you had stomach ache, she made these teas, and she put, you know, warm towels on your belly. Like, just, she always did natural things. And then throughout the years, someone would always introduce me to something natural. And I think it was always a seed being planted. And, you know, because it was constantly, I just think that it kept fermenting, and then it, you know, it was always watered. And so when the time came, it was just like, well, yeah, I'm going to do it differently.
Right. And, you know, I'd love to touch on, because you prior to all of this, if you want to just kind of tell everybody about your background, you were an actress. You're yes. an actress in Hollywood. You're a Hollywood actress. Yes. And, did you have to leave your career in Hollywood? Talk about
yeah,
that.
So what, yeah. Yeah. So I had a holding deal with CBS. I was put on the ballot to be considered to be a nominee for my role as Anna Rodriguez on the hit TV series, Without a Trace. Yeah. I hosted a TV show. I mean, I was doing really, really well. I had a holding deal that really took care of a lot of things for us. And so things were just going. But so when I got diagnosed with cancer, I knew that I had to just sit that to the side, pick up a camera, and create a documentary around how to heal the body, because I knew that I needed all the focus on what I was about to do, because I felt strongly that it was bigger than me and whatever I can imagine. So I had to not split my time and energy, but to just focus on the healing and then show everybody and record everything so that they see what worked, what didn't work, and what I went through.
What was it that you feel made the most difference in your recovery?
Oh my goodness. Well, it was actually a variety of things. First, diet was huge. Yeah. Because prior to getting cancer, I would say breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snack, all I had was dessert. And if we went to the restaurant, Chris would get his meat and potatoes, and I would get my, you know, my brownie with ice cream on top. And that was my dinner. And so I really didn't nourish my body. At the time, I really didn't understand nourishing the body. I just thought you eat because you're hungry. You know, I never got that you eat because it's your body's way of putting its nutrients. And so I really ate poorly. And I think because of that, it's where I ended up in the situation I was. And, you know, I honestly look at everything now and go, well, yeah, I was going to get cancer.
Yeah.
You know, I was so, like, there was nothing in my intake that gave me anything. I didn't even take supplements. I did nothing.
Right. And I think as a society, just in general, I mean, our diet overall is so poor. We eat yes. so much processed food. You know, yes. we don't, like you said, if we're not hungry, we don't eat. We don't eat with the goal of nourishing our bodies at all. And especially nurses ourselves are not known, although we are always encouraging healthy lifestyles and healthy diets, we are not known to be the healthiest of individuals. In fact, there have been studies done that show that some of the most unhealthy people are actually nurses. We are the most unhealthy population in the United yeah. States.
Well, that makes sense though. I mean, like,
yeah,
because if you think about, especially when you're trained to think that you have no control of your health, that just, you know, it's either genetics or anything. But the moment I changed my diet, I mean, I went completely raw vegan in a complete year. And everything had to be organic. I got it from the from the farmer's market. I didn't get it from the stores because I know that even organic, they would still spray it there. Mm-hmm. I didn't buy anything that came from a can, a box, or a bag. I juiced all day long, every day. It was nothing but juices that were, you know, and then I did it with a specific machine where it was a masticating juicer. I did 4 coffee enemas a day. I did wheatgrass enemas as well. I drank tons and tons of wheatgrass. It was like a whole turn. I mean, I did the Asiac tea. There was everything that I learned that fought cancer, I did.
No, but to your point, Kimberly, I think one of the reasons why the nurses, you know, they're, it's, I think people underestimate how demanding being a nurse really is. Mm-hmm. And I have to claim ignorance on that. Before Lourdes got sick, I also was just like, it's a job. Mm-hmm. Until I saw, you know, we lived in a hospital. I think the longest stint was 6 weeks, but in and out for that whole period of time when Lourdes was fighting cancer, we wound up in the hospital quite a bit. And you know, when you just observe these nurses, they have to be on the go. They're in charge of, I'm not even going to speak to how many people they were in charge of, but depending on where you were, like I know in the step down ICU, there was three to one nurse, I think, three patients to one nurse. And I want to say that number just grows, you know, like constantly. Yeah. So of course the nurses don't have time to really sit down and, you know, make sure that they're eating properly. I think it has more to do with the job itself being so demanding and ironically so.
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely that. It's that, you know, we have these really long shifts. We work these 12-hour shifts. You know, we don't sleep right, and we definitely don't hydrate. We can't have water at the nurse's station. To get to a break room is near impossible. You know, we are not able to even a lot of times, you know, use the bathroom, unfortunately. I mean, I've plenty of times I've gone an entire 12-hour shift without using the bathroom. So,
wow.
That was just completely unhealthy. Yeah, it's completely unhealthy. That all contributes to the poor health of nurses. And then, of course, just the incredible high stress levels. We're constantly asked to do more with less. And I can imagine, you know, I've been away from the bedside for almost or over a year now, and I can imagine how much worse it is now because we're so short-staffed. Because imagine this, that the hospitals have fired so many of their nursing staff over these vaccine mandates.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous.
Let's touch on that a little bit. Like, let's just talk about COVID in general and, you know, the last 2 years of just complete COVID insanity the protocols, the masking, lockdowns, you know, and of course these just unconstitutional jab mandates. So what are your thoughts on all of that?
You know, it makes me think of when I look at all this, because quickly when I was in and out of the hospital from being really ill, it wasn't because the stuff I was doing didn't work. I did a test that everyone knows is a PET scan. And ironic, like just weirdly, they knew that I was doing a documentary. They injected me with a different dose. You know, like everyone knows that when you do a scan, they do one injection. I had two injections. One came into a metal box that after they injected me with that, they deleted everything off the computer that they did this. And then they did the other one. And immediately is where the cancer spread through my entire body. By the end of that week, I had cancer everywhere. So when I look at now what's going on and what they're doing with people and giving people things that are going to make things worse for, in my opinion, the agenda they have totally correlates with what occurred when they were clear that they didn't like that I was posting daily on how I was improving, doing things naturally. And that was 12 years ago. Again, I didn't know what I know now, that everything gets checked, everything gets seen, everything is censored. And at that time is where I learned quickly not to share as much on social media as I did when it cost me almost my life. I look now at this whole thing that's going on with this pandemic, and it's so clear. Why would they ever give someone something that is supposed to, you know, get them better, but it doesn't. And they keep giving these meds to these people that are going to destroy their lungs to put them under. And then why are they getting paid for someone testing positive? Why are they getting paid if someone dies there? What's this extra pay? That alone says a lot for me. And when I look at even now with this whole, because even for my job as an actress, they wanted me to be tested. Just to go and you know, if you land the job, you have to be tested daily when you go on set. Well, I don't want to be tested not even ever once, let alone each day. And so you couldn't get a job unless you agreed to be tested. Now they're doing it where you have to be vaccinated or you can't work. And I went, well, then I won't work, because what's the push? We see clearly how many people have gotten vaccinated, and many, even folks that I know who took it, are dead now. And those that are alive are still getting sick with supposedly this COVID thing. I think it's because of the shot itself. And yet I haven't gotten sick once. So I haven't caught anything, haven't taken the shot, but the ones that are having issues.
Well, then, of course, you know, so there's a lot to unpack about this. Anytime a government oversteps, and in this circumstance, they have truly overstepped.
Yes.
To force a mandate in the way that they have. It's ironic because what Lourdes and I always say is that one of the big things that we push for on the Lourdes and Chris show, and one of our big belief systems, is that you do your own research and draw your own conclusions. Now, oftentimes, and by that I mean 99% of the time, people come to the conclusion that we agree with. Like, we go, yes, we see that. Every now and then, someone will claim to have done their research and done their own thing, and that's why they went ahead and got the vaccine. But it's a head-scratcher because there's so much compelling evidence now that says, A, these weren't effective. B, there's a...
Well, you can still get it. You can still... Yes. Spread it. So then what's the point of the shot?
Yeah, and there's an immense amount of side effects that went with this. And what's surprising to us, even to this day, is how they're still pushing, how it's still being pushed. And it's flabbergasting.
Well, even the article I read today, there was an article today that was they wrote that even though that many of the vaccinated have died compared to the unvaccinated, which I'm like, okay, so... The ones that aren't vaccinated aren't really dying, but the ones that are vaccinated are. The experts feel that that's not a reason not to be vaccinated. I'm like, are they serious?
I had to read that headline three times, Lourdes. I was like, what? I was like, wait a minute. Yeah. Let me read that again. What? But this is like the complete and total clown world. I have no other way to describe it. This is the clown world that we live in. And it's like they say things. It's like I saw something on a tweet today from Joe Biden. Or whoever pulls his strings. I saw a tweet. I saw a tweet that said something about how proud they were of how well how robust the economy is, and how many manufacturing jobs they've created. And I was like, "What in the world?" And it's like as if they just feel like if they say it, people will just be like, "Oh, okay, great. The economy's doing great," even though, you know, despite the fact that none of us are doing very well, I don't feel like, we're all struggling, and but everybody's like, "Oh, well,
it's weird."
It's insanely Orwellian, and that's the thing that I remember being in school and having to I was forced to read 1984. It's so funny because it was one of the curriculum. And I fervently argued with my classmates that said, "Oh, I see us going that way." And I go, "No way, no way in America would we ever, no way. Our freedoms are too important to us." But I think if you take a step back and you look at the bigger picture, and it'll be kind of bold and say this started with 9/11, and I'm not going to go into any sort of 9/11 conspiracies, even though they're out there. I'm sure people have really looked into that. What I'm going to say about that, though, is America got so very afraid that we immediately started giving away freedoms.
Yeah.
And it became a slippery slope. And I think it was all in preparation for where we are now. If you look at a bigger picture, we've gotten so terrified as a people that we're willing to sacrifice personal freedom, personal choice for what they would say is security. And despite the fact that's been proven to not be so, there are still too many people who believe that mandates need to happen, that now we need to start vaccinating children who are, what was it now, Kimberly, five months old now.
Six months. Yeah, they've really gone off the deep end with that one. But you're right. You're absolutely right, Chris. And it's like they have just kind of started chipping away at our resolve for years.
Yes. For years now.
And, you know, fear is an incredibly powerful proponent, and it can make us do things that we would not normally do. And that's for, everybody. I think I've been questioning this since the beginning, but even at the very, very beginning, maybe about, 3 days or a week or so, I was frightened myself. I was like, I was more afraid, not so much for myself, but, my husband at the time, he was very, he was not in good health, and I was scared to death that I was going to bring something home that he would not survive. I had no doubt I would survive it, but I knew that if I brought it home to him, he would very likely not survive. And, I ended up living in a camper in my driveway for about 2 weeks of that pandemic because I was just so frightened. And then, a couple of weeks went by and I talked to my husband and we were like, this is ridiculous, you know, and we decided that we weren't going to be continuing to be six feet away from each other and me living in a camper. We, decided that if we're trusting in the Lord, you know, and we're going to get through this together, and whatever is meant to happen is going to happen. We're going to do everything we can to prevent getting sick, obviously, but you know, we're not going to continue on with these ridiculous measures, because how long were we expected to do that? You know,
I think
the important thing for people to understand now, and what would help us as a people, is to start to question everything. We've gotten away from questioning everything. And I think that's what's important, is because I'll tell you what happened was, I was with you, Kimberly. I was terrified when this was first happening. I was like, oh no, they keep saying plague is coming. Here it is. And I'm freaking out. But then the news said something, and it gave me a sigh of relief. It said that you could be asymptomatic and still spread this to others.
Yeah.
And it was funny, because it was very freeing. Like, once they said that, I was like, oh, this is
not real.
This is not real. This is, we're fine. Like the second they said it, I go, well, that flies against all logical. Yeah,
that made no sense.
Made no sense. And I thought, well,
beautiful. If you're sick, you don't even know. It's like,
but I think if more people would just question everything.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
I think we've gotten used to also, to be fair, that we just get vaccines, and there's nothing wrong with vaccines, because it's going to help our immune system. And this is what it's always puzzled me. If getting a vaccine protects you because it goes in and then your immune system starts building these things, well, wouldn't it do the same thing, if not better, if you're exposed to it? Yes. And then it goes in through, you know, passing through your skin, like the filters we have, and does its job that way, instead of surpassing those steps. Wouldn't our immune system do exactly the same thing if we are exposed to whatever virus they created in a lab out and, you know, released to us? Wouldn't we do the same thing? Wouldn't the immune system go, wait, let me start building antibodies. Now let's go to the T cells. Now we got a lifetime immunity. No,
there's no money in that, Lourdes. There's no money. There's no money in that. You know, I think we're all about the same age. And, you know, so when I was younger, I remember my mom sending me down the street to little Amanda's house for a chickenpox party.
Yes.
She had the chickenpox, and my mom was like, okay, pack your bags. You're going to stay at Amanda's house tonight. And what happened was, I mean, they'd probably have her arrested today for doing something like that. But, you know, I ended up coming down with chickenpox. It was for Christmas. Thank you. Merry Christmas to me.
Right.
Chickenpox for Christmas, 9 years old. But you know what? I had it. I got over it. Yep. And I have antibodies. Amazing how that works.
And you know what's sad? They're giving kids shots for the chicken pox. I'm like, the chicken pox? We actually might do the same thing. Anybody who had the chicken pox, guess what? That's what you're going to go hang out with.
Plenty for them.
Yeah. And then you just got over it. And it's funny, because now I realize that there was, I can't remember which scientist said it, but they were talking about that when you allow yourself to be exposed to all these different things and your immune system builds it that way, even whether you catch chickenpox what's the other one that everybody keeps going about?
Measles.
Measles. You have not only a lifetime of immunity, but your body builds a certain thing that it helps you to actually prevent cancer and stuff. But it doesn't if you're getting the shots, because it overpasses those steps.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, as I alluded to in the opening, you know, many people that they believe that hospitals and physicians, their refusal to break from these rigid protocols that began during COVID, they feel like that began during COVID, but really, you know, it's actually, you had experienced this prior with your own daughter. So when we come back, I would love for you to tell us the story, because I will say it is truly remarkable. America Out Loud Talk Radio plays on the iHeartRadio network. You can also listen on our media player from any web browser anywhere in the world. We have the best in-class apps available on Apple, Android, or Alexa, 24/7, great talk radio. All of our shows go to podcast the following day. You can hear them on apps such as Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, iHeart Podcast, and many more. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts for me. I'll catch you on the other side of this break. Stay with us.
It's time, and this is what.
All All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD.
Hello, I'm Ben Marble, MD, and I founded MyFreeDoctor.com as a donation-supported, faith-based nonprofit with a mission to save lives by delivering free doctor visits to patients in all 50 states of America. MyFreeDoctor.com treats a broad range of health concerns like COVID-19, long COVID, sinus infections, urinary tract infections, rashes, medication refills, and more. So please visit MyFreeDoctor.com, where we're healing America one person at a time.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back to Nurses Out Loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton. Wherever you're listening from today and whatever you're doing, I thank you for giving me the gift of your time. Let's jump right back in. We've been talking to Lourdes and Chris Lavoie. Now, I was blessed to finally meet you both in person back in October at the Trinity Health and Freedom Expo that was out in Chicago, and I was just blown away by your presentation. I would really love for you to share with our listeners how you were able to save the life of your own daughter by insisting on option C.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad you enjoyed it. Well, it was interesting because what happened was my daughter had a severe brain injury, which doctors said that all her white matter was gone and that she was brain dead. You know, even if she miraculously woke up from it, she'd be at a vegetative state and her organs would still shut down and she would die. So they actually wanted me to turn off her machines.
In fact, that was the phone call. They called us and said, we're going to keep her alive long enough for you to come out and say our goodbyes and get the affairs in order. And then with you present, we can turn off the machine.
Yeah. And it was like, nope. So the moment I got that call, which was shocking, I couldn't get over that I got the call, and my mom was the first one to call. But long story short, I prayed because I thought, wait a minute, God has shown me that everything is fixable, and that that the way the body works, if you give it exactly what it needs, it will heal. And so I searched all over on the internet and thought, what builds the brain? And I found all these, articles on, was it the omega-3 fatty acids?
Right.
And then I shared it all over Facebook was one of them.
Well, I think what happened first, because when Lourdes got the call, we were very skeptical to begin with. And we thought there's just no way.
Well, yeah, there was like, this has to be wrong.
Yeah. And I think what happened first was once we realized this was real and we spoke to the nurse at the hospital. And we realized this was real. She was, in fact, in a coma, and she had suffered a traumatic brain injury. I think Lourdes first broke down, but then what we learned with option C, with Lourdes' journey, was that you go to God. And so I think the first thing Lourdes did was she prayed.
Yeah, because once you ask, what's the answer to fix this, you'll find it. And no sooner than I asked, I'm like, you show me everything was fixable. How do I fix this? And the first thought that crossed my mind was get onto social media or get on internet. I started looking what fixes the brain, what repairs it. Found omega-3s. I shared it on Facebook, the situation. And then I had a friend who actually sent me a video on a boy who was hit by a car and was in the same situation. And it was omega-3 fatty acid, 20 grams, by the way, put in the feeding tube. Wow. So I reached out to the doctor and said, look, I'm not turning off machines. This is what I want to do. I flew out there immediately. And after the discussion, he's like, well, you know, 3 grams is a lot. And I'm like, no. 20 grams of fish oil a day through her feeding tube. And it took a lot. I mean, I had to fight them. It wasn't like they just said, sure.
No, on the contrary, it took Lourdes fighting tooth and nail to the top of the food chain, so to speak, of the hospital, because, you know, obviously no one was willing to accept this. They all had made their conclusion that our daughter was basically alive by machines only almost like a technicality at this point. And they weren't willing to entertain any other options than what they have already decided. And it's kind of a theme for this whole thing.
Yeah. And what it's interesting because they'll pressure you just to do what they say. But I think that they learned real fast that that's not me. And so I was like, nope, I'm not turning off the machines. She's my daughter. This is what we are going to do. I'm not asking, I'm telling. And so the head doctor then stepped in. He was a sweet guy. He said, well, look, if this is what you want to do, just bring in the stuff and then they'll take it to the pharmacy. They'll put a prescription written on it and, you know, let's try it. And so I did, I brought them the stuff. They gave it to her. There was, mind you, all these other doctors literally fought me. There was one that's like, what do you think omega-3s are going to do for your daughter? And he was trying to talk down to me. So then I talked back down to him and I said, wait, you're a doctor and you have no idea what omega-3 does for the brain. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so, and then he just was all bugged that I said it to him that way.
You made a lot of enemies.
Oh yeah. And I didn't really care. I wasn't there to, you know, I was there to save my daughter, not to make friends. And so afterwards, I think by the eighth day of giving her the 20 grams of fish oil, she woke up. She did wake up in a vegetative state.
Well, before that though, they kind of pulled some shenanigans.
Oh yes.
And so again, question everything, people. That's the takeaway. Laura started looking at, well, what is she getting right now? What is she taking?
I made them take all the prescriptions they had her on off.
Well, one of them was propofol.
Yep. But they took her off that through the IV, but
yes,
they kept the patch that I didn't know she had on her on.
Yeah.
And so I found that when I was giving her breath, I'm like, what's this? And that's when the nurse told me what it was. And I'm like, wait, I told them specifically I wanted nothing on her. Once those things were taken off and she was getting the 20 grams of fish oil, she did wake up.
Yeah, so, shockingly, when her eyes opened, they said, well, that could happen. That's got nothing to do with this.
What they call doll eyes.
Doll eyes. Yeah. So you're telling me, just to not to interrupt your story, but
no, go ahead.
I just really want to make sense of this. So you're telling me that they had her on propofol, I'm assuming like a fentanyl patch maybe, and
yes,
propofol.
Yep.
And we're saying, well, she's not responsive.
Yep.
Right.
Well, I wouldn't expect her to be of that propofol and fentanyl. So that's interesting. And did they give you a reason as to why they didn't want to try the fish oil, just because they felt like it wouldn't work, or what was their?
First of all, it's because it's, you know, it's not their protocol, and they were willing to let her die, but oh no. And then it's like, and you know, that's high doses. She could bleed eternally.
Yeah. They did quote internal bleeding.
Yeah. And I'm going, wait, let me get this straight. You're willing to let her die, but you're worried about bleeding.
Right. Right. Because what they're telling you is that she's not going to make it either way. So at that point, why not try anything at that point?
Exactly.
Because it's not going to, if according to them, there's no hope. So it's certainly not going to make anything any worse. So at that point, I would say, yeah, try anything.
Oh, yeah.
Well, so we had resistance from the family as well. That were basically yelling at us to
listen to the doctors.
They know peace. Let her go peacefully. You're dragging us out.
It was annoying. But I think what's interesting is they had her on so many things that I had them take her off of. They even had her on seizure medication.
That's right.
And I'm like, she doesn't have seizures. And I had to argue with this doctor that insisted that my daughter, that's why she was getting it. First of all, she's brain dead, you said. Now you're telling me she's getting seizures. I didn't see any of those episodes occurring. The only thing that would occur, which happened to me even when I was super sick, is her leg would tremble a little bit. The one leg, which happened to me when I was ill. So I said, I took care of patients, you know, because I was a medical assistant at this one, I won't mention the place I worked at, but I dealt with people that had every type of seizure, you know, from grand mal to petit. And it's like, that's not a seizure. So he's arguing with me. I said, look, I worked for 5 years with these patients and I know that that's not a seizure. And he says, well, I dealt with people with seizures for 10 years and I'm telling you that's a seizure. Luckily, at the moment, I tell you, God was on my side. The neurologist walks in, her leg does the same thing. And I said, that is not a seizure. And the neurologist said, no, it's not. And then I said, and I looked at the doctor, I said, well, apparently my 5 years outdid your 10. And he stormed out of the room.
Oh, I love it. I mean, she's probably just having like muscle fasciculations. I mean,
Yes.
I mean, apparently you have to be like a nurse or somebody like a, you know, like lower level.
Exactly.
Ain't that the truth? God bless the nurses.
I tell you, that's so true.
So her eyes opened, but then they kept pushing their agenda, saying, "Well, this doesn't mean what you think it means."
Yeah, she's still gonna.
She's still vegetative. And to prove the point, they continued
to check her. You know, like take a gauze?
Gauze.
And put it on her eye. Like, so of course, it didn't flinch. They scrape under her foot. So, but they kept doing this constantly. And I said, "Don't touch my daughter's eyes again. You can clearly see she's not there yet. You don't need to keep doing this."
Yeah.
So I was like, anytime they tried stuff, I was like, nope, not allowing you guys to do that. Nope, you can't do that either. Nope. So they were just annoyed with me and I didn't care. It's like, she gets no meds. She only gets the fish oil. They, she was swollen and they kept blaming the brain injury. I said, no, she needs a diuretic.
Yes.
And they're like, she doesn't. I said, she needs give her a diuretic. So they gave her a diuretic. Lord and behold, the swelling went down.
Imagine that. Imagine.
And they're like,
And for the record, Lourdes had to go through the nurses on that, by the way.
Yep. Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Yep. And that's a nurse's job to advocate for their patient. I've had to do that many times where I've had to call a doctor and say, you know, I really think that this patient would benefit from the use of a diuretic or, you know, so nurses should absolutely be doing that. And unfortunately, so many of them these days are not doing that. They're not using their critical thinking skills to think about, like, what are they seeing in their assessment and how might these different interventions have a better outcome for their patients. And that's a real shame that that's not happening.
Oh, it's true. I mean, in fact, out of all the nurses there, actually all the nurses did not like me, but one. And one was the only one that got where I was coming from, backed me up on everything I said, while the other ones literally try to argue and fight with me. And I'm like, I really don't care. And in fact, they were giving her, what was the other thing they gave her? Oh, so she had this, you know, when she was getting better, she had this cough. And it was clearly she had, like, you know, bronchitis or something. It was so clear that that was the case. And so they're like, no, she doesn't need that. She's fine. And I'm like, she definitely needs an antibiotic. And I'm like, I can tell she needs an antibiotic. So as I went up to the nurse, I'm like, I'm so tired of these people telling me that she doesn't need something when it's clear that she does. Went up there, the doctor and them were there, and they're saying, no, we did the chest x-ray and her chest x-ray came out fine. I said, I want to see her chest x-rays. Let's see it. Mm-hmm. So they bring it out and they tell me, see, it's fine. And I'm going, wow, you look at that and you see fine. All I see is white.
Oh.
How is that fine? Yeah. She needs an antibiotic, and I mean now. And you could tell that they didn't know what to say. They were stunned. So they went and got her the antibiotic, which cleared up the cough and stuff. But it was horrible.
So I'm sorry, not to leapfrog too far into this, but her eyes were open.
Her eyes were open. She it took her a while before she, you know, she didn't really, wasn't responding yet. But within the end of the month, she did start responding. Her eyes started tracking. The second month, she was able to like chew on ice. The third month, she spoke. And then after that, I brought her home. And then she went, you know, it took about, I don't know, 6 months or something to get her, because she was in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
But then she finally, you know, she walks. Yeah. I mean, she walks with a limp, but she walks.
And then she had physical therapy for a while. And I think the moral of the story is that you know, you just don't give up on the people you love. And you know, because Lourdes just refused to back down, Lourdes refused. Our daughter's first words were, "I love you, Mom." Wow. Yeah. You know, and that speaks to, I think, the connection between the two of them, for sure. But we knew that there was a way because Lourdes was shown a way. And when you have faith like that, and when you know that you're making a stand for someone you love more than yourself. By the way, as she got better, the doctors, I think it finally took for her to start tracking and to start responding, for them to finally stop saying, well, she'll still be in a vegetative state. She'll still eventually die. You're making it worse for her. She's in a lot of pain. And it wasn't until she started tracking with her eyes and responding like that, that they...
Well, they didn't say anything.
Yeah.
The only one, to be fair, who I to this day, I this guy is a great doctor. He really is out for the people. He's the head doctor of that ICU floor. Actually emailed me and thanked me and said, thank you for this, because we don't get taught this in medical school. This guy is telling me, and I believe it, there's no way they teach them that there's natural things that can heal you if this happens or that happens. And he said, you know, it's like, thank you. Now, he thanked me.
While we were in ICU, literally every day someone passed while we were there with Christina. And it was
so swollen. And I'm like,
it was almost commonplace.
What I didn't get is, you know, every time I saw these people, like, they were just swollen. I'm like, why aren't they giving us something? You know, too much swelling, everyone knows, is going to cause cell death. Well, if they're in ICU and they're in that predicament and you're not giving them nothing to at least help heal that, yeah, you're going to cause more cell deaths. Yes, you're going to cause more issues and more complications, and the body's going to shut down. And there was every day for 5 days, someone died. So 5 people died in the week that I was there with my daughter.
Now, then Christina eventually got back with physical therapy. She got back so well, she actually moved out. She moved out on her own again.
Yep.
And got with a guy and got pregnant. And this is all around the time of COVID coming into full swing.
Yep. And after I started seeing that there were some women that after they gave birth, and they were tested and they tested positive for this COVID, their kid, their baby, their newborn baby was taken.
Yes.
There was one lady that her baby was taken. It was 4 months into it, and she still hadn't had her baby. Never mind, her husband tested negative. It didn't matter. They didn't get the baby. So I'm like, oh no, this ain't happening with my grandchild. So I read up on how to give birth at home. I bought everything I needed to clip and clamp and cut the cord. I learned, you know, if the baby comes, you know, feet first, sideways, butt first, what do I do? I'm like, I got this. And then I delivered my grandson at home.
You are truly a remarkable woman, Lourdes. I mean, you just amaze me. I will tell you, in this story, it's truly a remarkable one. But, you know, there are also some really just heartbreaking elements to it, because it just highlights the dangers of implicitly trusting the white coat, right? Because so many would have just done that. They would have just listened to the doctors. And, you know, how many lives could have been spared if people hadn't relied so heavily on the knowledge and the so-called expertise of medical professionals?
Yes. I got to tell you, oh my gosh, that just clicked in my mind. A year or two ago, this kid was shot in the head, and my friend reached out to me because he was brain dead. He had fragments of bullets and stuff in his brain and whatever, and they were giving up on him. And she said, you know, do you think what you did for your daughter will help them? I said, absolutely, but his parents are going to have to fight to get this to happen. And the parents did. And they were in Cedars-Sinai, the whole big, you know, everybody thinks it's so great.
Yeah.
And the doctors thought the mother was nuts. And I'm like, at this point, they had nothing to lose. And long story short, they did get it into his system. And so he woke up. So yeah, that's that.
Amazing. You know, but it's so true, because if not for your tenacity and insisting on option C, your daughter would not be with us today.
Correct.
Your grandchild would not be here.
Yes.
You know,
a cute little grandson.
Yeah. I mean, and it's so important that we just empower people to be their own advocates and to learn how to advocate for their loved ones. I mean, let me be clear. I'm not discrediting all physicians. You know, Western medicine, I believe it has a place. I do. But we also have to understand and take some accountability for our own health. And you touched on that earlier, Chris, because it truly is. It's our responsibility. Doctors, nurses, other medical professionals, we are merely here to guide you along your health journey, not to dictate it. So please don't ever allow any doctor or nurse to belittle you for wanting to be an active participant in your own health. Don't let that happen. You know, it's just, it's so important to stay informed, because unfortunately, you know, many of our medical providers, as you found out, Lourdes, many of our medical providers are not informed. And that's just a sad reality that we all face.
That's so true. And we need more and more nurses like you.
Thank you. Yeah, I really hate about that is I will probably never be back at the bedside. And I told you this when I was on your show, is I truly loved being a bedside nurse. I loved everything about nursing and, you know, trying to, again, identify these, what's going on with my patient and how can we make it better? You know, we see a need and we focus on creating solutions to that problem. And that's always what, you know, nurses have historically done. But again, we're just starting to see that is, unfortunately, that breed of a nurse is a dying one, which is, it's just quite unfortunate. Yeah. I think that so many of us are going to just suffer, you know, dire consequences because of the fact that they've fired so many of these nurses who would advocate for their patients.
That's the reality. And it's funny because we have to acknowledge, and I think it'd be folly for us to not acknowledge that there's clearly a larger agenda at play here. When you see that instantaneously, for example, when we found out about ivermectin, it wasn't maybe within 24 hours, we were flooded with all these memes about horse medicine and crazy talk and, you know, oh, go ahead and take your horse medicine. And it's funny because
your horse paste.
If we adhere to how we've been trained, and I mean this as a society, we've been trained this way now, and we need to look at that. If we adhere to that, we go, wow, yeah, horse medicine, that's crazy. Oh, look at that. They're nuts. Because we've been trained to just without question accept everything that's been given to us. We say, yes, you're right. That's what it is. And the reality is, ivermectin, before it was a horse medicine, it was used on humans. And
oh, yeah. Three decades.
Yeah. And it has a place. And
well, that's the thing, is it was made for humans first. Mm-hmm. It was only in the, you know, the birth of ivermectin that they learned that it also helps animals, but it was clearly for people first. That's why I thought, well, isn't that funny that they're flipping it around and saying it's, you know. But it's a dewormer for horses. But I'm like, wait, no.
That's what I really started to become suspicious of all of this when I saw them, you know, demonizing this incredibly safe medication that we've used this safely for decades. Billions of doses have been given safely.
And as I understand in other parts of the world, in other countries in the world, it's widely accepted as a form of treatment.
Well, they have it over the counter.
And they call it, one country, they call it the weekend medicine, if I remember right.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's like, if you had a really bad weekend, by the end of it, you're fine if you take this. I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I feel sick. Great. By the end of the weekend, you'll be fine. You take this.
Yeah. And that's in other countries that, I don't know, it was Africa or what, but they have it where it's, you don't have to get a prescription for it because that's how safe it is.
Exactly. It has a higher safety profile than an aspirin, a Tylenol, I believe. So it was interesting. And that's really when I started to question everything, when I saw them demonizing and attacking this medication. And I'm talking about physicians who I couldn't figure it out. I'm like, you know, what is the more frightening scenario? Is it that they are just, you know, complicit in their silence about it, or that they don't know any better when they should, when they start talking about how dangerous ivermectin is? You know, they suppress these life-saving medications, all while pushing a protocol, remdesivir, that wasn't effective, was not helping patients, was in fact making people very ill, and in many cases, killing patients. That's the very reason I left bedside nursing, because I wasn't about to watch one more of my patients just needlessly die when there is a safe and effective medication. And I couldn't believe, at first you want to believe it's just like a knowledge deficit that they don't know. And you're like really excited to tell them, hey, look at these studies and look at what this is doing. And it's not a knowledge deficit at all. It's all very, very intentional. So that's why I'm at the point where I don't trust any of it. Like, I am not going to a hospital for any reason whatsoever.
You know, when it comes to storytelling, we call this the inciting incident. This is the moment where the hero can no longer deny that there's something going on and they have to change. Otherwise they're not the hero. And I think you're the hero because you saw that there was you saw your inciting incident. You said this can't be right, and it got you questioning everything. And then you started looking for the man behind the curtain, and he was there. And I think that's just a page from a playbook that everybody needs to start accepting, that when you see the news outlets, start looking for the fine print on page five and look at what's really going on, you know, so to speak, because something else is always happening. It's always sleight of hand. Yep. And if people start questioning everything, I think that'll make the world a better place just right there.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. And I'm excited to see, like, there are nurses that are finally waking up. Have you heard about the amazing event that we have happening out in Orlando, January 5th through the 8th? Yeah. So we're going to be hosting the American Freedom Nurses Summit. It's going to be part of that larger American Health and Freedom Expo that's being put on by Wellness Parenting Revolution. And I'll tell you, it's really going to be an amazing event. We've got all of these amazing nurses that are finally coming out to speak their truth and to be able to be together with a group of like-minded nurses. It's going to be amazing. And we've got incredible speaker, Dr. Peter McCullough, who is my like all-time favorite physician slash human being at this point after he cured me from COVID. But, you know, he's going to be there as well. So it'll be great to catch up with him and just so many others who have really been fighting on the front lines of this war for medical freedom and really for humanity. So tickets are definitely, I hope you guys can make it out there. I think it would be great. I'd love to see you guys again, but tickets are available. Not going to last long. So guys, go to wellnessparenting.info to secure your spot. We will share that in the show notes, as well as we'll share all of the social media links and links to get in touch with Chris and Lourdes, and of course, to watch their amazing show. And you could also subscribe to our Substack at nursefreedomnetwork.substack.com. And that'll get you some updates on this event and many others. Lourdes and Chris Lavoie, thank you so much for joining us today. That's all the time that we have for today, friends. But remember, we are here on the air 5 days a week, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern, with an encore at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Different nurse host daily. Please be sure to tune in and listen to myself and my amazing sister nurses. As we walk you through all of these hot topics, we will empower you with information and education. We will advocate and we will stand in the gap for you because we are nurses and this is what we do. I'm your host, Nurse Kimberly Overton, and you can find me here every Wednesday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern. Until next time, be safe, be well, and God bless. Be sure to make AmericaOutloud.com your daily stop for all the latest news and happenings. We all must do our part and share the stories, the articles, the podcasts, and videos so we can help secure America's future. This is Nurses Out Loud. We are six nurses brought together, bound by ethical principles and our mission to protect the heart, souls, mind, and body of humanity. The last 3 years have changed us in different ways. Nurses Emily and Cammie sued their nursing school over tyrannical vaccine mandates, and they won in federal court. Nurse April designed human body simulators to teach people disease processes. Nurse Jody blew the whistle on the federal government. Nurse Michelle helped thousands obtain early treatment and taught about protocols put forth by brave doctors. I created a network of nurses to function within a parallel system aimed at providing holistic care. Evil ran rampant, but it has been exposed. We are six strong nurses, not afraid to engage in the battle. We want to empower and encourage others to do the same. We are in a war for the truth. We are putting out a bounty on the real misinformation and exposing the purveyors of propaganda. Join us weekdays with a different nurse host daily, no topics off limits, as we shine our lights and expose the darkness.
It's time.